Good afternoon. We are Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105. That was Madonna there and Express Yourself. My thanks go to Chris and, of course, the science team for the past half an hour on your radio. If you go over to our website, cambridge105.fm, and you can check out our full schedule listing there. Welcome along to Summer Saturday. This is the programme that puts in the spotlight some of the events that make up the summer in our city calendar. We've got some great things coming up on the show today. At 3:30, I'll be joined live in the studio by Emma Mitchell. Now, she's a novice cyclist from Cambridge who's participating in the London to Cambridge bike ride, and she's helping raise money for Breakthrough Breast Cancer. We'll be doing that interview around about 3:30 this afternoon. Meanwhile, just after 4:00, Pete Robbins is out and about at the Cambridge Folk Festival in Cherry Hinton Hall. We hear from Pete a little bit later on as well. And finally, Rob Chipperfield's been out at the opening of the Museum of Computing History, and we'll be crossing over to Rob in about 10 minutes time at around about 3:15. But because this is Summer Saturday, if you've got an event happening and you'd like us to promote it over the next 2 hours, do get in touch. 07919 070490 on the text. You can tweet me at Cambridge105 on Twitter, over on the Facebook wall, facebook.com/Cambridge105, or you can send me an email, matt@Cambridge105.fm. But in the meantime, Rob Chipperfield is currently out and about in Cambridge. He's at the Museum of Computing History. And good afternoon, Rob.
Thanks very much, Matt. So I'm down here just off Coldham's Lane at the Centre for Computing History. And I'm joined at the moment by Jason Fitzpatrick. Jason, I think this is all your baby, really, isn't it? Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Kind of, yeah. I suppose I'm the heart of it, and it's all my fault. But there is quite a few volunteers behind it as well that have made it actually happen today.
Okay, so just for those who might not have heard of the centre before, give me a brief outline. We're surrounded here by, you can probably hear in the background, the sounds of Mario and Pac-Man and what have you. What's the project all about, really?
Okay, so, computers, they've completely changed our lives over the past sort of 30, 40 years. Yet, when a computer is sort of old and out of date, it just becomes rubbish. It has no use to anyone. So what we're about is preserving those computers and making sure that they're, not lost for next generations to be able to look at and see where this technology that we all use today has come from.
Okay, so yeah, you've obviously got some absolute classics that certainly I remember from my childhood. What sort of date range are you covering, and do you call last year's computers history, or do you call just those that are older than sort of 2 or 3 years old?
Certainly some people call last year's computers history. We go back considerably further. Some of the earliest machines we have are from sort of the early 60s. So we're talking about big machines, with reels of tape, the kind of James Bond stuff that you used to see in the films. But then everything from there all the way up to, I think we go up to sort of sixth generation consoles and sort of gaming systems, like the Nintendo GameCube and stuff like that, PlayStation 2. So, it's not that old, but they've already been superseded. So we're now with much more powerful consoles and computers today.
Now, Cambridge, of course, has a wonderful history in the whole of computing, really. I'm from EdSec, the world's first programmable computer, and really on from there. And it's taken you quite a lot of effort, I think, to actually bring this museum to Cambridge, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've been based in Haverhill. We've been around for about 7 years now. It's just been a slow sort of progression and building up and up and up. But we've been supported by the general public fantastically. So they've donated all sorts of different things that sometimes you didn't even know existed. So it's been a long sort of haul, but then I think they're still equally as long ahead. We've got lots of big plans for the museum. This building is just the start. We'd like to build somewhere much bigger and really represent Cambridge's history in a way that Cambridge deserves.
Okay, so if people come down here, as you can hear in the background, it's not just the sort of museum that you go and look at something and say, isn't that pretty, is it? It's very much interactive.
Absolutely, yeah. To a lot of people, a computer that's not on is just a pile of, electronics in a plastic case. To us, it's got to be something that is on. Maybe you want to play the old games you remember from, those early days. Maybe you want to see what the word processor was like in early times, and how, although the functionality is the same, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles they do today. Most of our machines are on, as many as we can anyway at the moment. We're going to continue to build on that and also build some educational exhibits as well, show kids how binary works, that kind of thing. So, how logic gates work, how computers generally function. And we've also got a classroom just next door. We can have school parties in, we can teach kids how to program, because it's something that is now very much part of the curriculum, is showing kids not just how to use computers, but how to actually actually program them and maybe develop the next generation of whatever might come next.
So today's obviously your grand opening. It's the I came down here for one of the previews a month or so ago, but today you're open to the public. If people want to come down and visit, when are the opening hours? When should they come down?
So we're going to be open weekends, so Saturdays and Sundays, and we're also going to be open up at the moment on Wednesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. So it's a full week, just shifted by a couple of days. Basically, check the website, which is www.computinghistory.org.uk. Go on there and just check that we are open on those days. That's what we intend to do. If over time it seems that we can't do that, then it might change slightly, but that's what we're aiming for at the moment.
Excellent. And it's how much to get in?
It's £5 for adults at the moment, and it's £4 for children.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us. All the best for the big opening, and hopefully we're going to try and drag you along onto one of the Gadget Guide slots, I think, in the future. We'll have to talk about that and maybe go into a bit of the technical information. Thank you, Jason.
Love to be there. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you.
Thank you, and back to you in the studio, Matt.
Thank you very much. That was Rob Chipperfield reporting from us from the Museum of Computing Technology this afternoon. And we'll hear another report from Rob in around about half an hour's time, just before 4 o'clock. But because the time is just edging up to 3:30, it means that I can welcome along my guest this afternoon, which is Em Mitchell. And she's also brought on a colleague, Cornelius, as well. So good afternoon to you both.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon, and you're going to be taking part in the London to Cambridge bike ride, raising money for Breakthrough Breast Cancer. Now, breast cancer is the most common cancer in the UK, with around 50,000 women and around 500 men diagnosed each year. It's thought to be caused by a combination of genes, lifestyles and life choices and things surrounding the environment. And Breakthrough Breast Cancer helped raise money to support pioneering research and support victims of this horrible disease. So good afternoon to you, Emma, and good afternoon, Cornelius. First of all, Emma, tell us a little bit about why you've decided to take part in the bike ride.
Well, we've got quite a few keen cyclists that use the pub, lots of the Dobblers, and they've been doing the ride for we've done it about five times before. A lot of the riders that are going with us tomorrow, so it's quite a challenge to do the ride, and also it raises money for a great cause.
And have you done much preparation leading into this big event?
Yeah, we've been going out on Sunday mornings for the last, how many weeks? A couple of months, I think.
Yeah, 2 months.
Doing about 40 miles, I think 40 or 50 miles every Sunday, just building up to the big 60, which is the London to Cambridge.
So you had a big sort of get fit regime? Have you been on exercise bikes and things like that?
No, yeah, we still like a beer afterwards.
And how much money have you raised so far? Have you been taking sponsorship?
Yeah, we've been taking sponsorship in the pub and obviously friends and family, so we're hoping to raise at least, well, I'm not sure what the target is just yet. I think we're going for about £500 or £600. Also our brewery will probably chuck in a bit as well.
That'd be nice, so, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And have you done the event before?
I haven't personally, but like I say, Team Dobblers have been doing it quite a few years running, so yeah, like Cornelius has done it before, haven't you?
Yeah, 2:05 we started.
Okay, and how much money have you raised in the past?
Well, it all goes together. I think all together we've raised over £1,000.
That's very impressive, and you've done it in previous years. Is it a tough endurance test?
It takes a while. We like to, it's not really a race, but we do like to challenge each other first to get home, the first to the beer tent.
And obviously, I think there's a mixture of both men and women are obviously taking part in it to raise money. Obviously, men can be victims of breast cancer as well as obviously females as well. And when it comes to sort of preparing, do you have to get yourself psyched up before you do a race like that or taking part in it? Is it just one of those things you just turn up and just go and hope for the best?
I think you really have to put in some practice, unless you're a real keen cyclist anyway. I mean, like I say, it's my first time doing it, so I've kind of thought I've got to put the practice in, which I've been trying to get in around work and everything, but I guess you could have a go. I mean, it's not a race. I mean, you can spend all day doing it, and there's plenty of stops on the way. I know a lot of the local pubs and stuff on the route will stop and have toilet breaks and refreshments. So
wonderful stuff. And have you done fundraising activities in the past, or is this your first one?
No, yeah, the pub regularly does fundraising. There's a group of us did the Race for Life last Sunday, so it's been a bit of a week this week, really.
Big fundraising
week.
Have a
rest
indeed.
Next Sunday.
And if someone wants to sponsor you, obviously it takes place tomorrow, doesn't it? It's not too late to get sponsorship in. Do you have like a Just Giving site where people can donate?
The no, you can come in the pub and we can happily take your sponsorship money from you, or if you just put some money towards Breakthrough Breast Cancer, I'm sure they've got a website where you can give.
And for people who aren't familiar where the pub is, just tell
it's
people the location.
It's just around the corner from you on Sturton Street, 184, just on the corner of Sturton Street and Abbey Walk.
Wonderful stuff. And Cornelius, you've done it in the past. Have you had to sort of psych yourself up? Have you had to go on an exercise bike and get prepared?
No, we just bike to and from the pub every day, you know, like we do. Then we just do the 50-mile ride, 40-mile ride a Sunday, then we just get on and go.
Wonderful stuff. Well, the best of luck to you, Emma, and
thank you.
We'll be certainly rooting for you tomorrow. It's certainly an endurance challenge. If I'd have known about it, I probably would have taken part myself.
There's always next year.
I certainly will do. Emma Cornelius, thank you very much for both coming
thank
in to
you.
Talk about
thank
the London to Cambridge bike ride. Rob Chipperfield's out and about this afternoon. He's at the Museum of Computing History, and we can join him now. Good afternoon, Rob.
Thanks very much, Matt. And, well, I'm still down here at the Centre for Computing History, just off Coldham's Lane. You can follow all the signposts into the museum for their grand opening. So I spoke to Jason just a moment ago, and now I'm joined by Andy Taylor. Good afternoon, Andy.
Afternoon.
And you're one of the volunteers here at the centre, I think.
Yes, I am.
So what got you interested in this? Because it's you've obviously been very involved with building up the museum, but also I think this stems from something you've had going at home as well.
Yes, I have got a sort of substantial collection at home, which I've been putting together for the last few years. And I was hunting some kit once and bumped into Jason, and we got talking, and now I'm a volunteer here.
So when you say you've got a bit of a collection of kit at home, this isn't that you're going out and buying the latest laptops or whatever. This is a little bit different to what most people do, isn't it?
Yes, probably the most modern machine in that collection would be about 1995.
Fantastic. And you know, it really is everything, isn't it, from the earliest desktop PCs up to the slightly more recent.
Yeah, Amstrad, Sinclairs, Commodores, Dragons, Amigas, Atari STs, the lot.
And can you still do useful things with them? Or obviously, they sit there looking very nice, but do you actually use them as well?
Not as much as I like to. They're mainly there just for the collection. My boys like to play with it as well. They like the old games. There's like a little bit of basic programming as well, which is pretty good. And it's getting them onto the Raspberry Pi.
And so that's the thing, is the educational aspect without them sort of thinking they're at school or whatever. But with the games, obviously the graphics on things like the NES and the SNES and so on, yeah, they can't compete with the modern PlayStation 3 and so on. Does that actually bother them, or do they kind of enjoy the slightly retro feel?
Not at all, because they love playing Minecraft on the Xbox 360, which is very, very blocky.
I suppose that's true, actually. There's been a bit of a change in culture almost between the just going for the photorealistic games and actually, yeah, maybe it's more the gameplay that's important.
Yeah, they love it. They play Minecraft for hours and they go, Daddy, please can I go and play on the BBC for a bit? Let's get the Amstrad out today. You know, it's quite interesting for them as well.
So have you brought them down to the museum? What do they make of it down here?
They think it's great. They love walking around. They love also playing with the Sinclair C5 in the car park.
So for those who maybe are a little bit too young to remember that, what's the C5?
It's a battery-operated and pedal-operated bike, but you sit down very low and you have the steering wheel. It's actually underneath your legs rather than in front of you.
Hang on, that must be a little bit interesting to drive.
It is. It's a bit scary. I would never, ever drive it on the public road.
But that was the original intention, wasn't it? It was meant to be the replacement for private transport, really.
No, if you get hit by a car in that thing, you probably wouldn't be riding it again.
So maybe not the most successful business idea in the book, but great, great fun nonetheless. We've got a load of computing gear around us. What's your favourite out of all this, Andy?
Well, it has to be the machine that my parents bought me back in the early 80s, which was the Amstrad CPC 6128.
And you still remember using it and you still enjoy using it?
I still have it now. It always has pride of place on my desk.
Fantastic. Andy, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Matt, if anyone wants to come and join us, we're open here until 5 o'clock this evening. And again, all day tomorrow from 10 a.m, I think, in the morning. And it's just off Coldham's Lane. So if anyone wants to come down, it'll be a very good day for all of the family. Back to you, Matt.
Thank you very much, Rob. That's Rob Chipperfield reporting for us from the Museum of Computing History, just off Colden's Lane in Cambridge. That sounds like a fantastic event. I'm going to have to get down there in the next couple of weeks, find out what all the fuss is about, because it sounds like it's a fantastic opening thing for the Museum of Computing History. Welcome back to Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. I'm keeping you company through until 5 o'clock. This is the programme that puts in the spotlight some of the events that make up the summer in the city calendar. Coming up in this hour, Julian Clover's got some reports for us from the Windsor Road Gardens, and we'll be hearing his reports a little bit later on. But it is just after 4 o'clock, which means I can now cross over live to Pete Robbins, who's at Cherry Hinton Hall for the Cambridge Folk Festival this afternoon. Good afternoon, Pete.
Hi, Matt. How you doing?
Yes, not too bad, not too bad. What's the atmosphere like down on Cherry Hinton Hall at the moment?
Well, it's just fabulous. I mean, every year, Cambridge Folk Festival just gets better and better and better each year. And it's the 49th year of the Cambridge Folk Festival. It turns 50 next year. And as always, the atmosphere is really very relaxed indeed. It's really, it can be very intimate at times, even though it's a big site. And, you know, it's like meeting up with a bunch of old friends, actually. It's just wonderful.
Wonderful stuff. And what can you see on the stage at the moment?
Well, I'm actually behind the club tent at the moment, where Acoustic Roots and Cambridge Acoustic Nights are having their showcase afternoon, featuring such acts as Peter Knight's Geek Spanner, Blair Dunlop, a few really well-known faces and characters. And Dave Sleepfield from Cambridge Acoustic Nights joins me now. Here.
Hello, mate. Hello. Good afternoon.
Are you okay?
I'm very well, mate. Yeah, I was just trying to work out if it's afternoon or evening yet, but it is still afternoon.
Just, well, the sun is shining.
It's like a long day.
Yes, indeed. Now, this is not the first... Actually, how many years have you been doing a session at Club 10?
10, 12 years.
10 or 12 years. And as you can probably hear, Matt, the next act has started to warm up and go on behind us. Club 10. You might hear a blazing fiddle going on in the background. At the moment, yeah, several black people. But for you, what's so special about Cambridge Folk Festival?
It's just a lot of fun. There are a lot of very good musicians. Everybody's friendly, talkative. It's a good community spirit.
And I enjoy it. Excellent. And some of the highlights, I mean, some of the faces you've had through over the years have just been incredible. I believe you had the stage, didn't you? This year you have Blair Dunlop.
Yeah.
Pink Tonight's Kids Band.
Yep.
A lot
of unknown people who are very, very good and really deserve to be out there and be recognised.
Well, this is it, because Cambridge Acoustic Nights and Acoustic Roots are local club nights that happen at U2 on Norfolk Street. And it's really good to see all the Cambridge folk clubs and all the folk clubs in the surrounding area getting to come and be a part of this amazing festival.
Yeah, don't you agree? And bringing along people from all parts of the country, because people queue up to do a 10-minute set, 15-minute set. They queue for up to 4 hours to do a 15-minute set. And they come from everywhere, basically. International as well. Australian, American, Scottish, I dare say so. And absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and like any other festival, I really feel that they're here for one thing and one thing only, and that is the music and the companionship.
Yeah, exactly.
We just don't get...
Totally agree. It's brilliant.
It's great. And the sun's been shining, which is better than last year as well.
Oh, yeah. There's
a lot of rain last year, so it's great. Yeah.
So far, so good.
There you go. Well, Dave, I know you've got a lot of work. You've got your camera primed and you're taking lots of
shots. I am, mate.
Well, thanks for speaking to us.
You very much, Pete, and enjoy the rest of the weekend, everybody.
I will do. Okay, thank you very much. So, Matt, that's a bit of a view from the local angle here at the club tent at Cambridge Folk Festival. There's also the People's Front Room as well. Which features pretty much just open mic slots all day, every day. And so you really do get a huge mix of, it's not always just about the headline act here, there's some really great up-and-coming stuff. Features at the Den, features at the Club Tent, and also features on the People's Front Room, which is a stage I'm particularly fond of.
And can you give us an idea of how many people have turned out so far?
Well, all I can probably tell you with any accuracy is I was at the press tent earlier today, and when I left the press tent to come and do this link, they had probably 10 Sunday tickets left. So if anyone is hearing this and wants to come down and experience the magic and just wonderful atmosphere of Cambridge Folk Festival, do call the box office in Cambridge City Council box office and see what they've got left lying around, because you never know, you might be able to get a ticket for Sunday.
It's also worth mentioning the people camping out on Coldham's Common, because obviously Barmal Road, part of it has been coned off, especially for the buses to actually commute people from one place to another. And I went past Coldham's Common yesterday because I happened to live round the corner, and I tell you what, it's a sea of tents on Coldham's Common at the moment.
It is. Well, actually, I can walk by the camping area right now here at Cherry Hinton Hall, and it's a wonderful. It becomes this wonderful little English village for like 4 days, and it's just marvellous to see. It really is, and everyone seems to get involved with each other, and lots of parties, little parties happening. And the other thing that's just unique to folk music as well is the fact that what I find it unique to this sort of atmosphere anyway is the fact that people. Well, just damn. You know, someone's got a fiddle. After Bellowhead finished last night, which was an amazing moment. I love Bellowhead, as I'm sure some of the listeners know, and finished. They just started getting fiddles out by the main arena and just carried on jamming right through to the early hours. It's just fantastic to see. No, it was great. And there was also another wonderful moment last night where the Levellers actually invited Bellowhead up on the stage to play. There was about 14 or 15 musicians on stage one at the end of the Levellers set last night, which was fabulous as well.
Brilliant stuff. Well, enjoy the rest of your day there, Pete. It sounds like a fantastic experience. I'm sad I couldn't actually be down there, but enjoy the rest of your day. And you've got a folk festival special coming up on Monday evening as part of your Night of the Artisans programme, haven't you?
Yeah, so I was just about to mention that. If anyone wants to hear full interviews with the likes of Larkin Poe, the Levellers, the Mavericks, Pete Knight's Geek Spanner, so many more to talk about. We have Bella Hardy and the Night Watchman. I've got Heidi Talbot on the show as well. Then do tune in this Monday night, 7 p.m, Cambridge 105 on 105 FM and online until 10 p.m. for a full 3 hours of Cambridge Folk Festival goodness. It's going to be wonderful. I'm very much looking forward to it myself. I wish I could listen to it, actually.
Never mind. Thank you very much, Pete. So that was Pete Robbins reporting live from the Cambridge Folk Festival at Cherry Hinton Hall. Looks like a fantastic couple of days' worth of entertainment there. So the weather holds out. You heard Pete touch upon the Mavericks. He is going to have an interview with them as part of his Folk Festival special on Monday, because, of course, they are performing live. I think it's this evening at the Cambridge Folk Festival. And here's one of their most famous tracks now, Dance the Night Away. Now, every year, the residents of Windsor Road, Cambridge, compete in the Best Kept Garden competition. Now, Julian Clover has been speaking to the organiser, Owen Spencer-Thomas, and this year's judge, Andrew Harper-Smith, horticultural advisor at Knockcuts Garden Centre.
How long have you lived here?
Well, we've lived here since the mid-70s, so we feel we're old-timers here in the street. We're by no means the longest residents here, but always a steady flow, a steady turnover, and both young and older families, which makes for a really beautiful, really good community spirit.
And it's a genuine mix, is it, of young and old, sort of people who have maybe lived in Cambridge all of their lives and other people who have come here either for the university, for the science, or some of the other things the city has to offer?
Very mixed population, very mixed occupations, yes. I mean, when we moved here in the mid-70s, there were people who'd lived in these houses since they were built.
Which was when?
Mid-1930s. And so we're talking of houses now that are, getting on in years. People tend to stay for quite a while, but with a street that's got 100 houses, you know there will be a turnover.
Just by the fact there's 100, I guess. And the one thing I notice, having cycled from the other side of town where I live, where you've got Victorian terraces and houses very close together and narrow streets, here it's actually rather spacious.
Oh, we're so lucky. You see, we've got an avenue of trees. We're now walking down the end of Windsor Road, which is a cul-de-sac, and that's an enormous advantage because for the last 3 years, once a year, we've had permission to close the cul-de-sac to traffic and we've run a street party here. And it's things like that that get the neighbourhood together and really get a good community spirit going.
Tell me about the competition. How many years has this been running for now?
Well, that's quite a new venture. It's been run under the residents, the Windsor Road Residents Association, and the idea is that it's been running just 3 years, and it seems to be working, so it has, I think, an endless future.
How many entrants do you get, as a rule?
Well, almost everybody. But, of course, what we do is that we always say to the winner, sorry, the next 2 years we're not including you in the competition. Give us a chance for the kudos to be passed around a bit. There's no sort of bitter competition. It's all a bit of good fun.
As nobody goes planting weeds overnight just to make sure that get an edge.
None of that. I think, as I say, it's a good-spirited neighbourhood.
And gardening, I sometimes kind of feel it's like an older person's pastime. Do you get a good age range actually taking part in the competition?
I think there are differences between the ages. And there are some young people who take a lot of care over their gardens, but it's a different style.
I was going to ask, slightly different, maybe perhaps more paving going in there and more ad hoc plants as opposed to the traditional flower beds, perhaps?
Yes, you see, the judge is on the lookout for a lot of different things. So we're looking for a pleasing impression, a tidy appearance, a variety of plant range, good floral colour combinations, and sustainable and environmentally friendly approach to gardening. Now, all that can produce very different people as winners. And the difference, I think, between young and old is this, that the older person is much more likely to be a keen gardener in the sense that he will breed some of his own plants. You know, he'll split his primroses in the spring and grow his own. The younger person's much more likely to put a bit more concrete down because there's a car to park. And also, he will, I think, be more concerned about the layout and the design. That's the difference.
OK, well, let's go and find out how the residents have been getting on.
Yeah. Andrew, how have you got on?
What are you saying?
It's quite a good mix, actually. I mean, where we are a few properties back, I mean, you've even got gooseberries in the front garden.
In the front garden?
Lovely, you know, tomato plants.
It'd be tempting if you ring at the bell and they weren't asking to go and have a look in, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. You know, you've got a fruit salad almost with, you know, with some of the properties. So, you know, but I mean, colour-wise, I mean, you've got your traditional bedding plants in there. You've got, you know, some people quite haven't got into summer yet because summer was very late this year. You know, the traditional manicured lawn sort of the front garden. So you have got a good mixture, you know, a good variety to look at.
And how competitive do you think the people have been here? Are there things which you've noticed have gone in the last few months since the competition was announced, or are they people who have tended to their gardens over a period of months and years?
You've certainly got the people who have got the time and the commitment to the garden. I mean, you can see those that sort of are almost pristine, shall we say. You can also see those that are clearly busy working and perhaps enjoy the privacy of their back garden perhaps more than their front garden. So, you know, there is certainly a degree, definitely.
But I'm thinking you can keep a garden well. You can set out the sort of time that you have available and then work out what you can do to make your garden nice within that time. There may be a few hard decisions along the way.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I suppose the hardest decision along the way is the lawn, because a lot of people think lawns are easy, but to keep a good lawn, it takes an awful lot of maintenance. So, I mean, that's probably the hardest decision, was people to get rid of the idea that a lawn is an essential in the garden. You know, although it doesn't, it's nice to have the green swede to sort of offset things, but I mean, obviously, again, with front gardens as well, parking becomes an issue, and it's obviously bearing in mind that nowadays you've got to get planning permission to put change it from to lawns, etc. So, you know.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, to put gravel in that, you're supposed to get planning permission rather than just, whereas once upon a time people just ripped the gardens out and away they went, you
yes.
know.
I guess this is like a floodplain issue.
It's indeed, yes, moisture, yes, yeah.
Okay, so have you made your decision yet?
Oh, only halfway through.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, we'll catch up with you a little later on.
So that was Julian Clover speaking to Owen Spencer-Thomas. He's one of the organisers of the Best Kept Garden competition for the Windsor Road Gardens. So we'll be finding out who the winner of that competition was, and another interview in around about 10 minutes' time here on Community Radio. In your city, Cambridge 105, it is Summer Saturday with myself, Matt Webb. I'm keeping you company through until 5 o'clock, and then Jason Allen is here with the Saturday evening show. Continuing on our set of interviews which Julian Clover's filed for us from the Windsor Road Best Kept Garden competition. Notcut's horticulture advisor Andrew Harper-Smith has made his decision with regard to this in the Windsor Road Best Kept Garden competition, and here he is with Julian now.
So give us the highlights of what you've seen on Windsor Road today.
It's very interesting, actually. I mean, you've got an eclectic mix, I suppose, the way to phrase it. You've got a mixture of gardens where people just clearly use it as a way to get into the house. You've also got those that invest a little bit more time into it. I mean, you've got good use of vehicles and how to get vehicles off the road and into the garden space. Basically, looked at... There's something snoring, so you have to cut that.
I can ask you a question. There was a house not too far from here where they put sort of... It looked like little slats which the car could then drive up on to protect the lawn.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's like, you know, that... Well, certainly one of those that were in the mix. To say they've got a nice old good lawn, as you say, horizontal slats, so they actually would take the wheels of the vehicle onto it. So you'd still kept the traditional sort of garden look of a front lawn, driveway separate, you know, which was nice. I mean, another property, you had a good mixture of edible products in the front garden, you know, gooseberries, tomatoes, crab apples. But I must admit, I did end up going more to the... traditional, conventional one, which is why we find ourselves in front of this property.
Indeed, we're at the home of John and Maureen Brown with, as you say, a very traditional garden. What was it about the garden that made you think, yeah, this is the one which is going to win?
Well, it was clearly been cared for. Time had been spent on it. I mean, the borders are immaculate. There is no weed in any of the borders. The lawn is well manicured. The edge of the lawn is well clipped. You've got a good mixture of plants as well, from sort of the magnolias for spring colour, moving through the seasons where you've got asters which will come out in the autumn period. Your spirea is in bloom at the moment. Dahlias, begonias, aubrietia would have been for earlier in the year as well. So, you know, you've got a good mix of interest. 12 months of the year.
And it's something which is pretty much as a set-out garden. Everything has its place, as opposed to a cottage garden where it's a little bit more sort of muddled up, isn't the word, but the plants are always collected together, almost naturally.
Yes, yeah, I mean, the cottage garden certainly is more of a natural feel to it. I mean, this is certainly more your sort of suburban-style garden where you've got regular, an area for this and an area for that sort of style, but it's not overly complicated. I mean, when it comes to sort of maintenance, you can see that the lawnmower can slip over the whole of the lawn easily. There's no sort of sharp angles where they've got to visit in and sort of cut out with a pair of scissors or anything like that.
And you can see a dividing line, can't you, between the earth and the start of the lawn. It's not like in merging into one another. Clearly somebody has come along and neatly edged it around.
Indeed, and so we've still discovered it was actually assistance from daughter-in-law, wasn't
yes,
it?
Andrew, thank you very much.
No problems.
So Maureen, you have the best kept front garden in Windsor Road. You happy with that?
My husband is highly delighted, and we have to say thanks to our daughter-in-law, who did quite a lot of weeding. And she comes from Needleworth, and she's had the best-kept allotment there for some time.
It's very... The weeding is very good, but the lawn is so green as well. I mean, hardly a trace of anything in there.
Well, yes, my husband is very much a lawn person. He likes to... Well, he used to bowl at one time, so he knows what green's like.
There's a crown green quality to it all.
Something like that, yes. Well,
what's your favourite part of the garden?
Well, I like them all, really. But I like the phlox in the corner.
Yeah,
they come up every year, which is something that you don't have to keep, you know, putting in every year. So annuals, I like annuals. They're not so much work.
You know they're going to be back the next year.
Yes.
Wonderful stuff. So that was Julian Clover catching up with Maureen, one of the winners of the Best Kept Garden competition at the Windsor Road Garden sort of celebrations that they do. I must also say thank you very much to the event organiser, Owen Spencer-Thomas, for his interview, and of course Knockcut's horticultural advisor, Andrew Harper-Smith, too. And you'll be able to hear that as part of the Summer Saturday podcast over the next couple of days over on our website at cambridge105.fm. This is Summer Saturday, the programme that puts in the spotlight some of the events that make up the Summer in the City calendar. Or should that now be past tense, green finger Julian?
I'm green fingered now, am I? I need to go and see other people who are much better than I am in the garden. If anybody's seen my back garden, will be able to vouch for entirely.
I'm sure it isn't that bad. So, obviously, I brought you in as well because you've been a key person as part of Summer Saturday. If you didn't know, this is the last Summer Saturday programme in the series. We've enjoyed putting these programmes together, I must admit.
Yeah, we don't want to put a dampener on summer, but as is traditional with summer, it's the start of the football season any week now. So next week we've got coverage from the Cambridge Rock Festival, and then the week after that, we have the start of the football season, although actually the first game that Cambridge United play is actually on the Sunday because he got moved for television commitments.
It always gets me for television commitments. It doesn't matter about the radio commitments.
No, don't mind us. We'll just move all of our schedule around to suit it. That's absolutely fine. So, no, I think about 8 weeks or so, isn't it, that we've been doing this on a Saturday afternoon. I think we've covered... I was trying to work it out outside. It's going to be something like an average of four events for each of the 8 weeks. So four eights are 32. That's not bad, really, is it?
So events we've covered, including the Amy Sesper Open Day. Rob Chipperfield reported from there. We covered the Unison Big Birthday Weekend on Parker's Piece. All manner of different events there. Milton Country Fair. East Anglia Air Ambulance Open Day, many, many things.
Yeah, I think the one I really enjoyed the most was probably the Covent Garden Street Party. Of course, we did the one right by us in Gwydir Street as well, also the Norfolk Street Party.
And too. The Hemingford Road one as
Hemingford
well.
Road, lots of street parties. And actually, I discovered they'd been on a Windsor Road as well. I mean, they sort of pretty much kept themselves to themselves on that, so they didn't shout about it too much. But the Covent Garden one was pretty good. It's just such a small street, so literally everybody knows each other. That was the one, of course, where they put up the plaques on each individual house. And we spoke to the historian involved in all of that, along with the landlady of the Six Bells, is it there?
I think it was, yeah, yes, that's right.
Struggling to remember, actually. I'm not the person who does kind of pub calls, really, because normally using up valuable drinking time as you move from place to place.
Anyway, there's a few thank yous. We've got to say thank you to a couple of people.
It's very dangerous, actually, because we're bound to miss somebody. So
if you name a couple of people, I'll name someone. Hopefully we won't.
Okay, so let's see how we can go. Rob Chipperfield, Dom Smith, Kerry.
Kerri-Anne Littlechild.
Kerri-Anne Littlechild.
Someone called Neil Whiteside from 105 Breakfast.
Neil Whiteside. Julie Whiteside, of course, because she did those wonderful interviews at the Open Studios last weekend. I'm struggling now.
Lee Last?
Lee Last, of course. How could we forget Lee Last? Oh, Robbie.
Yeah, Robbie Griffiths.
And Other Rob as well.
Other Rob.
Other Rob.
He
had to leave. We had too many Robs working on the programme.
Work experience, Rob Barber. Work Rob experience Barber. Cindy as well. Yeah, Rob Barber, work experience Cindy. Tim Willett, has he covered one show from here for us
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, he did one show.
Who else is there? Ooh, I'm trying to make sure I don't forget anyone.
Matt Webb, he's been quite heavily involved in it.
Yeah, we'll forget little old Matt. I'm trying to think of lots of beer. It's been a good team effort putting this programme together. It's been a pleasure coming in on a Saturday afternoon when you could be sitting out in the garden having a nice drink, obviously watching Wimbledon. All this has taken place during
I think the nice thing
event.
About it has actually been getting out and meeting people. Many of them were, you know, new Cambridge 105 already, perhaps getting a few new listeners along the way. And actually, you know, our job here as a community radio station is to go out and serve the community. And I don't really think you can serve the community without going out to meet it. So that's what we kind of started to do. The show started off very much as an email conversation one Monday afternoon between myself and Tim, and then sort of Matt came in very, very soon after that, and it all sort of
blossomed
came together from there. Anyway, so that's enough about
that. I'd like to compare it a bit to the film Sister Act, where they say they want us to go out and meet the people. And it's a bit like that, going out meeting the people and obviously getting involved in the community. Obviously, Neil down at the Caldecott Police and Fire Day and bits and pieces like that. The Cambridge Open Studios. Oh, there's so many events we can name. We've done so many events that we're getting quite boastful about it. We can't name them all. Anyway, so, it's been a fantastic couple of weeks. Hopefully Summer Sassay will return. We might have a best-of programme in the not-too-distant future. That would be quite good,
I think we
it?
Should put it on Christmas morning or something like that. Remember, folks, when we had this summer and it was hot.
Wonderful stuff. Anyway, it's now 9 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Must also say thank you very much for you for listening over the past 6 or 7 weeks. Obviously, without you listening, it'd be pretty pointless actually putting the show together. But it's been a wonderful, wonderful couple of weeks. And, as we say, the sports season is kicking off, so we'll be having some live football coverage from Cambridge United over the next couple of weeks as well. While you're here, Julian, what have you got coming up on Drive next week, 105 Drive?
Oh dear, now I have got on Monday night, we're talking about comedy on the punts. So you've...
I saw an article about this. Yes, the comedian, this lady, isn't it?
Yes, Hannah, she's coming in to have a chat with us about that on Monday. I don't know how far I am. I'm not very well planned this week, I have to say. I have an idea for a guest, but they don't know it yet, so I better keep quiet. So that'll be on Wednesday.
Okay, wonderful stuff. And of course, I'll be back on your radio between 12 and 2 on Tuesday with my usual lunchtime show. As I say, Jason Allen is coming up next with the Saturday evening programme. Then we've got a great selection of other programmes. Between 6 and 7 tonight, it's our brand new programme. Well, it's only a couple of weeks old, actually, Under the Music Tree. And then we have the Kaleidoscopic Rebellion with Paul Corey between 9 and 11 o'clock. Non-stop Cambridge 105, just the best music all night long between 11 and 8 o'clock in the morning. And then waking up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed tomorrow morning, it's Phil Rowe on Sunday Breakfast. And if you go over to our website, cambridge105.fm, you can check out our full schedule listing there. Well, that pretty much wraps up the show for today. As I say, Jason Allen's coming up next. Thank you very much for your ear over the past couple of weeks. We've enjoyed putting the show together as much as hopefully you've enjoyed listening to it. And from me and Julian, goodbye for now, isn't it, really, from Summer Saturday?
Just a gentle farewell. We'll be back.
Anyway, we must also bring a bit of breaking news just before we go. The US singer-songwriter J.J. Cale has died of a heart attack at the age of 74. He was famous for the River Runs Deep and a number of hits, including this one, After Midnight. It's Cambridge 105. Stay tuned. Jason Allen up at 5.